Blog Talk Radio.
Advancements in technology, shifting markets, and the gig economy are changing the nature of work. With this in mind, Harvard Business School Executive Education is launching a new program on managing the future of work. Based on the latest research into the forces reshaping workforce demographics, this program is designed to help employers remain competitive by thinking strategically about today's evolving business landscape. Learn more by clicking the banner or visiting hbs.me/future. That's hbs.me/future.
ForRadio.com.
Join me, Rebecca Christensen-Mapson, in real time for real topics on Real Talk with Rebecca on ForRadio.com.
This is For Radio, a media platform used to elevate voices and empower dreams. Welcome to Real Talk with Rebecca. Rebecca, take it away.
Well, good evening, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Real Talk with Rebecca Mapson. This is a special broadcast. We're going to really get serious and talk about some emotional health in the midst of a Mental Health Awareness Week. You know, it's been a while since I've been on the air. It's been a while since I've come to our listeners with a radio show. So this is going to be fun getting the cobwebs out and, you know, seeing how this goes. But I'm really excited because so much has been transitioning. So much has been happening. And I just think that it was really good timing tonight to do a special broadcast. And let me tell you why. First and foremost is we have an epidemic going on in our country as well as around the world. And I'm going to bring some guests on tonight and we're going to talk about it. But for those of you who don't know me, my name is Becky Mapston, Becky Christensen Mapston, and I have been with For Radio for going on 5 years, 6 years now. I hosted a show with Maria DiGiovanni, who is the owner of For, on Sundays called Solstice to Sunday. And we were just a small group of women and we merged together a bunch of pageant ladies and had church on Sunday on the radio. And that grew from a small group of eight to all around the world. It was quite an excursion. Then we branched off, and for the last 5 years with my aunt, we have hosted She's Gone Country with the CB Cowgirls. And so that's been a show on the radio. And we've taken a hiatus from that. We're growing that brand out and redirecting that brand. So we'll probably be back. We don't know. So stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, if anyone has been following anything that I do on Facebook or social media, you will know that I am competing in just 2 weeks for the title of Mrs. Montana America. Now, the America system is an amazing, just traditional pageant system that's been around for many, many years, and to me is really just the classic icon of pageantry for married women. And so I picked this pageant system because I really believe it meshes cohesively with my message of She's Gone Country, CB promos and the CB Cowgirls, which is all about empowering heritage and the Western lifestyle, because it really roots around the necessity that we have in this country right now to connect. We have lost connection. Our children have lost connection. This generation is just so unfortunately disconnected from so many things that made this country and these families great, the foundation, the American values that this country is built on. And so my whole passion and purpose is to really reunite and bring that message forward, to reconnect and find the value, not only in just your heritage and your family, but the diversity of the people that are around you and their heritage and their family, because there's life lessons there that can fill a toolbox to give us tools emotionally and otherwise to carry us into the future so we're healthy, whole, functional adults. So there you have it. That's the whole purpose of what I'm doing. And in the midst of that, cohesively with the Mrs. America system, their platform, their national charity is the Victoria Siegel Foundation. And so right now I'm going to bring on a couple guests, and I really want to talk about the Victoria Siegel Foundation, and we'll get into that in a minute, as well as the fact that we're in March, it's Mental Health Awareness Month, and really how it's May. I'm missing a couple months. See, this is where the cobwebs come and need to get brushed off. Anyway, May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Victoria Siegel Foundation really is about not only just the emotional state that's causing our youth to be over-medicated, but it's also about helping reduce the drug abuse epidemic that we're seeing with prescription drugs. So that's everything in a nutshell. I'm probably talking 100 miles a minute, and that's okay. I'll slow it down. But I want to bring on my guest tonight and start having some real talk. We're going to just bring it to the table and really discuss the issues that are really manifesting in our country right now, as well as around the world. So first to the show, I would love to introduce my sweet friend from Southern California that I have been able to be a part of watching her grow and flourish within Four International, and that is Miss Elizabeth Rivas. She is the U.S. Ambassador for Mental Wellness, and I'm going to let her come on. Elizabeth, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, how are you?
Well, I'm good now. I'm going to slow down. I got a producer in the background saying, slow it down. I'm talking. Can't tell I've been doing some voiceovers and trying to talk as fast as I possibly can. Go ahead. And then I'm also going to bring to the show is our producer and the owner and operator of Four International and Four Radio, and that is U.S. Ambassador. Actually, you're just Ms. Ambassador for LEO. I'm going to let you know, Maria DiGiovanni. Is it law enforcement? I don't know the coding. Is it you go ahead and you explain it.
It's law enforcement officer PTSD. So wellness and making sure that our law enforcement stays mentally well. And that's one of the reasons why Elizabeth and I have partnered and our hearts are so in tune with each other, because Elizabeth is a wife of a law enforcement officer. So, and I was the one telling you to slow down. So I was so excited that you are back on the radio, though, because I've missed having you on the radio. I love listening to your voice, and I cannot wait, because I know the passion that you have when it comes to this topic. I know the passion that Elizabeth has when it comes to this topic, and it has touched all of us in some way, shape, or form, especially this week internationally. So thank you so much for having the show. Elizabeth, thank you so much for being Becky's guest, and let's do it, ladies.
My pleasure.
Elizabeth, will you share with the listeners a little bit about your background? Because you have a plethora of background in this area, in this topic that we're going to be discussing. So please share with our listeners.
Yes, I'd love to. Well, first off, I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. I have my degree in psychology, my bachelor's and master's, and I'm currently in my doctorate program. So I'm really excited about someday being called Dr. Elizabeth, but my background is pretty extensive. I actually worked in the jail as a corrections officer for 6 years with a city here in Orange County, California, and I injured my back, and my doctor said, you need to find another career, and so I was like, uh-oh, I don't have a plan B, so I kind of fell into therapy because I started working for a psychologist who just truly inspired me, and I decided to go back to school, and I did, and I ended up working at an outpatient psychiatric hospital, and I also worked as a sexual assault victim advocate at the district attorney's office. So I have a lot of background in the criminal justice area, also in corrections, and what I currently do is I work with victims of crime, and that's everything from domestic violence, sexual abuse, human trafficking, homicide, you name it, I work with it. But wow, you're absolutely right. We do have a major issue with mental health and drug addiction, and there's a couple things I want to bring up because I do work with a lot of adolescents. Mm-hmm. And if you ever, I mean, I had to take psychopharmacology in school. I don't prescribe medication, but I had to learn about it. I had to learn about all the different types of medication. But one thing a lot of people don't understand is that, and it's starting to come out a little bit, but there's a warning on those labels. For children, it can cause suicidal ideations.
Wow.
And so, yeah. And so a lot of people, and, you know, this is where there's a lot of controversy. I've met some really, really good psychiatrists, and I've met some not so good. And as a therapist, I think it's all of our jobs to educate our community. Our clients need to know what they're putting in their bodies, what are the short-term and long-term effects of the medication. And if a 15-year-old is going to a psychiatrist, I think it's important that they understand the side effects and to give them those cautionary warnings that you may have suicidal ideations. And the other thing that people don't understand is that one medication doesn't fit everybody.
Right.
Sometimes they have to switch the medication 2, 3, 4 times, up the dosage, lower the dosage, based on, again, side effects that the client is having. And so we need to do a better job of educating our community, our patients, and family members.
Well, and I think that's a very good place to start because there's so many different diagnoses, if I'm saying that correctly, a diagnosis that one can get, quote unquote, mental health issues. And I really think it's important because when we look at what happened with the Siegel's daughter, Victoria, when she committed, I don't want to say committed suicide, accidental overdose. She had been found with traces of methadone and Zoloft. And when I was reading through the information and studying and understanding more about her story, what I found is that a psychiatrist, she had started seeing a psychiatrist, and she was dealing with some stress from school. And we all know our youth is going through a lot of stress nowadays because just life in general. Let's just put it that way right now. Our dynamics, our home dynamics, our culture dynamics, everything is in such a, to me, in my personal opinion, disarray. And everything is being redefined. And so not only do we have a parental generation that it's completely being thrown out here saying, okay, now we're redefining what this means and what that means. And you have to now tell your kids that this means this and that means that. There's so much confusion going on. So when you're dealing with someone who is stressed from school, has maybe a different dynamic in their home than another family, where the, for instance, the Siegels are very busy people. They have a very large family. And so it's very easy to feel, stressed from school, feel lonely, deal with those depression issues because everyone's so busy that that's where I talk about where you get disconnected. And so you add injury to insult, and then you throw in cyberbullying on top of it, and you have just this concoction for accidental overdoses. And what I am finding interesting is that what we're doing is because in our busyness and because in our disconnection is that we're really truly raising up a generation, a lot of the times, of kids that don't have an emotional toolbox with tools in it to deal with their emotions. And so when something catastrophic happens, they have no clue what to do, but they know they've taken these pills over here to deal with stress. So let's take pills now to deal with this catastrophic emotion that I'm feeling, and everything will feel better. And so what I think is important is I know you're talking about, Elizabeth, how we need to do a better job educating and the dosages and this, that, and the other. What I want to preface and what I want to, talk about too is what about from a medical standpoint? I mean, I know she'll probably, chew my hide for talking about it, but I've had to deal with this with my daughter. And my daughter has really walked through some intense, intense anxiety, depression, mainly social anxiety. And then when she, went through all of the things that we went through with the divorce and so forth, that emotional trauma, she came to me and she's like, Mom, I just really, really feel like I need to get on some medication. And I remember telling her at the time, the only way that's going to happen is if you agree to go see a counselor, because I know that although the medicine has a purpose to help what's going on, to even keel things out, to help process through what she's going through, it's not going to do any good if she's not dealing with the root causes of what's causing those emotional triggers. And I feel like right now, the doctor that she has right now has been phenomenal because, like you said, Elizabeth, she's gone through, okay, let's try this medication. Okay, that's not working. Let's try that medication. Okay, let's up the dosage. Let's lower the dosage. Let's take you off of this. Let's try that. And what we have found is none of them were working. And so she came to a point where she's sitting with her doctor, and this was after she'd transferred doctors, and the doctor said, look, these medicines aren't working for you. She still hadn't seen a counselor against my better judgment to tell her to go. And she said, are you exercising? Sabrina said, well, no. And she says, I want you to try exercising. Are you doing this? Are you doing that? And she sent her on these different obstacles or, you know, options for her rather than taking the medication to cope with her stress. She hasn't gone back on medication yet. I'm not saying that that's not going to happen, but where do we draw the line where we deal with those options first? Like, for instance, let's talk about you. You guys have a therapy horse for dealing with folks that have PTSD. What do you think we can do as a society to say, hey, let's try different options first before we go down the road of prescription drugs? Because it's proven if you change your emotional responses and you change your emotional experiences, the patterns that are going on in your brain will reverse and things will change, where really you don't have a breakdown in your brain in some of these instances.
I 100% agree with you. And I think you have sat in on one of my sessions because you sound just like me. That's exactly what I do when I talk to my clients. And even in school, when I went through school to become a therapist, it is absolutely 100% required, and it is highly recommended that if you are on psychotropic medications, that you, at the same time, are going to mental health therapy. It's not one or the other. It's both. They work together in conjunction because you're right. If we're not dealing with the underlying issues, the medication is just a Band-Aid. It's not doing anything. And so that is extremely important. I just looked up. Have you ever heard of black box warning?
No, I haven't.
That's the strictest warning put in the labeling of prescription drugs or drug products by the FDA. When there is a reasonable evidence of an association of a serious hazard with the drug, it is basically the warning with the black box around it. And so a very common medication, Abilify, I'm looking at this on the computer right now, that's used for depression and bipolar disorder. Guess what the warning is?
Black box.
Suicidal thoughts in youth.
Wow.
Then I'm looking at another drug for type 2 diabetes. What's the warning? Congestive heart failure. Heart failure risk. And I'm glad, even if it happened to one person, we need to be warned about it. We have a right to know. And so...
Well, and it's true. And the thing, you know, unfortunately, and this brings up another important issue too, as we talk about this, you know, we talk about the labels and we talk about what it says and we see the commercials on TV. And I was reading this book and I actually have to look up the name of the gentleman, but I saw him one night on TV and he was talking about the fact that he had been on anxiety medication and depression medicine most of his young adult life. And nothing was changing for him. You know, his emotions weren't changing. You know, nothing was really getting better for him. So he didn't feel like there was any purpose in continuing on the medication. And a minute here. And what he went out and found in the studies that he did, it's called Lost Connections, uncovering the real causes of depression and the unexpected solutions. And this book has been really enlightening for me because, you know, just like when Victoria passed away, her parents didn't know. I mean, she'd come to her parents and said, you know what, I'm addicted to this. I need to go into rehab. And they felt like she was released out of rehab too soon. But the reality is we trust the doctors putting our children on medicine, unfortunately. Some of us do, some of us don't. I'm a little more paranoid. I'm a little more skeptical. I'm a little bit more ask 150 million questions, call 500 times a week, and be nosy, be nosy, be nosy. That's just kind of how I've been. My kids, you know, hate it, but I think one day they'll look back and say, thanks, Mom. But, you know, a lot of – one of the – I guess I'm kind of going in different directions. The Siegels, they didn't know. They didn't understand, you know, that their daughter had picked up this, you know, and started abusing these drugs to fill whatever emotional void she was trying to deal with. And so while they're away, you know, she has this overdose and has this happen and it leaves this void in her life. Now, what do we do? How do we make something so horrible and tragic? How do we make something good out of it? So their Victoria's Voice Foundation, their goal is just, you know, education, like you said, Elizabeth, is about educating and bringing together, like Marie does, thousands of small family foundations, you know, locking arms and joining forces. For them, it's when somebody else dies of a drug overdose and that some another foundation is created. So they're about, you know, uniting them and becoming a united front. But I think what's important also is that, you know, we as parents, we turn these medications over to our kids. And we say, okay, the doctor prescribed it. This is what you're supposed to take. This is how much you're supposed to take. You take it once a day at the same time, blah, 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 blah. And we walk away. Even when our kids are teenagers and older, assuming they're going to be responsible teenagers, not even thinking, okay, what happens when they're triggered? And that was an instance I found out and realized in my own life is that even though the symptoms were balancing out Sabrina, things were still triggering her. And I had to deal with that phone call that one night. Luckily, I was in tune with my daughter enough to know, you know, you don't sound right. What's going on? And instantly, my gut told me she took more medication than she was supposed to. And she was honest with me and told me. Not every kid has that ability to have that relationship with an adult to do that. So how do we educate our parents to help with that so that we can, you know, I mean, they produce all these signs, mental illness, early warning signs and symptoms I'm looking at, problems with concentration and memory, changes in their eating, not being able to complete tasks at school or at home, feeling worried, sad, empty, hopeless, worthless. Okay, when I look at that, I'm thinking mental illness, early warning signs and symptoms. What if we change it to emotional toolbox is empty, you know? How do we educate as a family to connect better and help getting these people the help that they need? You know, you're a family therapist. What is that dynamic like? How do you address that?
Well, this is one of the issues that, again, it's very controversial and something has to be done about it. But when it's an adolescent, under the age of 18, family can still intervene. However, if the patient says, I don't want you to tell my mom anything, they have to honor that. And I've had so many challenges with that. And even like if the child turned 18, they are now considered an adult, and I am not allowed to have any contact with their family if they say, don't talk to them. It takes...
Do you think that age should be raised?
It all comes down to conservatorship. You have to prove that that person is unable to care for themselves in order to get legal conservatorship. And each state is a little bit different. So I'm in California, but it takes a lot. And these families are so frustrated because they know that their loved one needs help, but their hands are tied. There's nothing they can do. If they say, do not talk to my parents, I cannot talk to them. Ugh. The only way I can intervene is if they're a danger to themselves or a danger to someone else.
Wow.
That's
going to be a
reporter.
Lot of pressure for you.
Well, I'm in a situation right now, and, you know, I'll change a little bit of the story just to protect the confidentiality of my patient, but I have a young boy who's on psychotropic medications. The medications were just changed, and he came in, and it's like a completely different boy now. His affect has completely changed, care anymore. He has no remorse, and it's my opinion that it's due to the medication change. And so, again, what do I do? He hasn't threatened anybody. He hasn't threatened suicide. What can we do? There isn't anything we can do. They say, take him to the hospital. The hospital is going to say, do you want to kill yourself? No. Do you want to kill someone else? No. Okay, we can't take him in. That's where people are falling through the cracks. There's red flags.
Interesting. Go ahead.
Uh-huh. There's red flags, but it's not enough to do a real intervention. And so
would you
again,
feel it's safe, do you feel because you're law enforcement, you're married to law enforcement, do you feel and this again I'm touching on some sensitive ground right here. Do you feel that that's part of the problem in the dynamic that we're seeing in our youth and all the chaos with the school shootings and so forth because they're taking these prescriptions are being prescribed to these youth, and if they are seeing therapists, you know, you can't discuss it with the parents. And then they're just having like something triggers them, and whether it's something from a side effect from the drug. I mean, can that possibly be what we're seeing because there's such an increase? I mean, like I said in our post, we're only 5% of the population of this world, but yet we prescribe 75% of the prescriptions that are out there. That is, to me, absolutely absurd. And I also found that through this book and through the studies that have been going on is U.S., London, you know, England and so forth, is that a lot of these prescription drug companies are the ones that do their own studies. And so, of course, not going to say that these studies are anything abnormal or they don't work because then they're not going to sell them. But they've actually been proven where there's been placebo tests done and a group done where they've been given the prescription. And the placebo group showed more signs of improvement than those that were on the actual prescription. And it boiled down to the belief level of the people taking the medication.
Becky, a medication as simple as Tylenol. Did you see that huge lawsuit with Tylenol? They lied about the side effects in babies. Yes, it's like, and that's not even a prescription. You can buy that over the counter, but they left out information that was crucial for the consumer. And that's what I mean. Give us the information so that we can make an educated decision on our bodies, on our lives. But when we're given false information or not all of the truth, that to me is a crime. And that's why this lawsuit, it's just, there's so many issues. And I do have that conversation with my husband all the time. And to go back to the client that I was just talking about, I was able to get him to come forward, and he told me that he's being bullied at school. So, again, there's so many red flags. And I was able to get him to give me permission to talk to the caretaker, who is now going to go to the principal of the school, who's now going to contact the psychiatrist. And that's how it's supposed to work, where we all come together for the good of the loved one that is suffering. And so,
Yeah,
I mean,
and you know, and it really, you know, I hate to sound like, sometimes I think my soul is way older than my birth certificate, because, you know, I think back into, you know, back when my family grew, you know, was coming across the country and all the settlers were settling and schoolhouses were built, you know, and you see it in movies, and I'm sure it's portrayed a little bit different in movies than in real life, but I bet you if you talk to them, they'd tell you, you know, families were so much of a closer knit unit, obviously, even 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And so there was the stability of that, but there was the community of the family unit, you know, the famous quote, it takes a tribe. because the reality is there's always been bullying. There's always been fight between him and her, him and him, or, you know, fighting over the girl, or, you know, someone talking, you know, mouthy to another kid and they get in a fight. You know, back in that day, it was normal. And it's still something that happens today. But where is it that it's become so severe? And what, and I can't help but ask myself where, you know, with the connection and the internet and everything that we have. I was telling Gray this the other day. I said, I'm guilty of it, not as bad as maybe as, you know, I don't know. I know I'm guilty of it. He agrees he's guilty of it. I ask him, where did we fall short in our generation in raising our kids that this generation is so out of control? And I say out of control, they're out of control emotionally, they're out of control physically. I mean, they're this entitlement attitude that we've given them. And I said, I'm guilty. I'm 100% guilty of partially being that parent that was a TV raising generation. Set your kids in front of a TV, go do what you got to do. You're busy, you're a single mom, let the TV entertain them. Let video games entertain them. Let this entertain them. Do you think that's partly part of the problem?
Absolutely. The whole loss of family unity has been gone. No one has dinner together anymore. Both parents are working outside the home, so other people are raising our kids. Video games, cell phones. When you go to a restaurant, you look at the tables and everybody's on a cell phone, the five-year-old on an iPad. There's no more connection. People are so detached. Teenagers are texting each other instead of calling each other or meeting at the park and playing and having fun. Social media and technology is good and it's bad and evil in many ways. I had a 10-year-old, 10 years old, addicted to pornography. He had access to everything at his fingertips. He had a cell phone. He had a computer. He was staying up till 12, 1 o'clock in the morning. And parents were clueless.
Well, and unfortunately, you know, and I guess it's just because I hate seeing, you know, I see all the news happening around here. And I go clear back to 1999 when that first major school shooting happened at Columbine. I can remember where I was. I can remember what I was doing because I was so traumatized by what I'd seen on TV. And then within a month or two later, a major shooting had happened just an hour and a half from Spokane in Moses Lake. And all I remember feeling was sorrow for those kids because I thought, what is it that they're going through emotionally that has pushed them so far to the limit that this is what they felt their only resort was? Or what triggered, you know what I'm saying? It's like, what could have possibly caused that? So that's why, you know, as I run and get ready to compete for Mrs. Montana and I'm promoting, you know, Heritage Matters, it fits so cohesively with the Victoria Siegel Foundation and the fundraiser that I'm doing, which I want to touch on, is A Heart for Victoria. And I'll let Maria come on in just a minute and kind of talk about the collaboration on that end of it. But if I could say a heart for Sabrina, I would, but I'm blessed enough to still have Sabrina here. She's healing. She's recovering. She's, you know, learning to thrive. She's learning to find her voice. She's learning that because of her roots that she can dig those roots in deep, and no matter what happens around her, she still has support. And unfortunately, Victoria didn't see that. Not that she didn't have it. She just didn't see it at the time and was triggered so intensely with the emotions that she was feeling that she lost hope. And I know that that's her parents' plight for the rest of their life, so that no one else has to go through what they went through and that no one has to go through what their daughter did. And so for me, the Heart for Victoria is really a fundraiser. It's an awareness necklace that we've collaborated with Four International and Rebecca Lawler Limited. And it's really to honor anyone that has dealt with what David and Victoria Siegel did. And they and have lost a loved one because of it. I mean, there's pages upon pages in different communities of victims of an overdose, prescription drug overdose, or suicide. And this fundraiser that will help support the Victoria Siegel Foundation is to honor those voices through Victoria's voice. So, Maria, are you there? Can you come on and just share a little bit about how this necklace was created?
Absolutely, and you've done such a good job of explaining the whole campaign here. Rebecca Lawler, as you know, we both met Rebecca face-to-face in 2001, 2002, and Rebecca came from abuse. And she is a philanthropic person and has a philanthropic heart, and she created the Hearts of Hope Foundation, where an artisan from, I'm going to cut right there and edit. Someone's doing something in the background. I can hear it. Okay, so I'm going to start again. 2, 3, 4. Rebecca has a philanthropic heart, and she created an amazing heart that is created out of glass. And the artist has to watch the glass. Just like God, when God refines us and he walks us through different things, he puts us into like a fiery furnace, kind of like with those guys back in what are their names? I always forget their names, three of them.
Misha.
Abednego.
Anyway. Fiery furnace.
That's correct. So when we're walking through different things in life, God kind of refines us. And the artist who creates the heart also does that because he has to create the heart in such a way that he molds it. But in order to set the diamond in the heart, it has to get a certain color of red for the heat. And as soon as it gets that color of red, can't be hotter or colder because it'll burn the diamond. If he sets the diamond, takes it off the heat, and it, boom. It makes it solid. And so this heart, we have created a campaign because it is funding so many different nonprofits out there. But this particular one for Victoria's Voice is so important because what you guys are talking about tonight is happening worldwide. And tonight, just like the heart goes worldwide, on the other side of the world, one of our ambassadors, the one that won Miss Beauty Ambassador for Greece, she lost her boyfriend this week. Absolutely this week. And she's devastated. And I cannot
believe. It was from medication.
That's correct. An overdose of prescription drugs. And it is and she's devastated because she didn't even ever expect it. So, again, this is something that we need to talk about. It's something that we do need to raise the voice. We do need to raise the volume worldwide. So it is so important that we've all come together, that we've all connected. Elizabeth's voice on this is so powerful because what I call the, she has so much going on up there in her brain. Right? And so it is so important for all of that knowledge. Yes, we laugh about it all the time because some of us don't have all that, right? We need you guys. But Elizabeth has gone through so much and you've gone through so much. Look at how it hit you personally. It has to be something that we talk about and that we don't place any more shame and blame, especially on these parents. But we've got to raise the volume. So I appreciate it. I appreciate you using this platform, your voices, the education that God gave you, the hearts that God gave you, and that's why a heart for Victoria's Voice is so important. So important.
Yeah, and you can purchase a heart by going to RebeccaMapston.com. It's right there on the front of my website, and the cost includes shipping. It's $79, and everything that we receive will be split between those three organizations: Four International, a Heart Four Foundation, Hearts of Hope Foundation, and Victoria Siegel Foundation. So really, again, Victoria's Voice Foundation was all about bringing together the 1,000 small foundations. Four International is all about locking arms with those that are on the front lines doing the work like David and Victoria Siegel are doing. And then, of course, you have the philanthropists like Rebecca Lawler, who was also a Mrs. Virginia America, on the backside creating the sources that can go out and really be the heart of what it is everyone is doing. So that is what my fundraising fundraising arm of choice will be this year if I'm blessed to win Mrs. Montana. If not, I'm still going to continue doing that because really, although I am promoting Victoria's Voice, I'm also a parent that has walked through it just like so many of us have. And I just really would never, ever want to have to walk the footsteps and the path that they've had to walk and have to deal with that. You know, and what that leads me to, I know, you know, we've been on here for about 40 minutes and we have about 20 minutes left, but you know, Elizabeth, one of the other areas that I think is important to talk about in this being May and Mental Health Awareness Month, and we've talked about the children, we've talked about the bullying and the emotional aspect of it, but there's also another aspect that we need to talk about, and that's PTSD, not only just in police officers, not only in our vets, but how this all correlates, because, you know, they're dealing with seniors and loneliness and having this plethora of prescription ability that or prescription drugs that are so accessible to them that if they were able to get to that state, they could just as easily overdose on them as well. And what it really boils back down to is how important, and this comes back to my platform as a whole of Heritage Matters and Connection Matters and connecting the generations. PTSD, folks coming back that have been in the military and that have seen combat, cops, they need connection, and they need connection not only with fellow brothers and sisters of the military or cops. There's verifiable proof that being connected to nature, being connected to, you know, the rural communities and horses and animals, having that connection is truly therapeutic and truly can help them heal from their PTSD without having to have them addicted for the rest of their life to prescription drugs. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Absolutely. And this is very near and dear to my heart. And yes, when we hear PTSD, everybody thinks veterans. That's the first thing that pops up, or more recently now, law enforcement, first responders. But believe it or not, most of my victims of crime have PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
And
sexual abuse.
One of the things that a lot of people don't understand is dissociation. Dissociation is something that our brain, when you were talking about the brain earlier, we're so infantile when it comes to understanding our brains. We're at, you know, doing cutting edge things with technology and learning more about our brain, but we're so far behind in truly understanding. But dissociation is our brain's way of protecting ourselves. When something horrific is happening to our bodies, or we are witnessing something extremely traumatic, our brain will dissociate. And so a lot of victims do not have a lot of recollection of the actual trauma until years later. So when we look at symptoms of PTSD, that's why you hear people say they were triggered, they had flashbacks, they have nightmares. Those are all classic symptoms of PTSD. And sometimes it does take years for that to manifest. It's very common. So when we run into these clients, they come to us and I talk to them and they tell me, this is what's going on, these are my symptoms. I have to, again, find out what was the underlying cause of all of this. And more than 90% of the time, they had some form of trauma in their childhood. And so we have to dig very deep. And there is now a therapy called EMDR that is very successful in dealing with PTSD and the symptoms related to that. And before I go on, I don't want to end without talking about really good coping skills. And I'm going to just read a few just so that if people are listening and they're saying, wow, this is great information, but how do I get help? What can I do for myself? These are things that we teach our clients, and they're very simple, but you have to practice them. And it's things like meditation, relaxation techniques, physical activity. When we exercise, it releases our feel-good hormones. That's why people say the runner's high. It's because those feel-good hormones are being released. Reading. maintaining and making new friendships, humor, laugh, rent a comedy, have a hobby. I love to Zumba and salsa dance, whatever it is that you like to do. And of course, first and foremost, spirituality, having a connection with your God, pets, a horse, a cat, whatever it is that you like. And then sleeping is crucial to good mental health and nutrition. And it's all connected. Spiritual, physical, mental, it's all connected. So I just wanted to throw that in there.
Oh, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, 100%. You know, I keep going back to the connection aspect of things, the social support group. You know, I think one of the great things, and I know it's one of the things I always tell my kids, and I think it's really helped seeing them, their parents be vulnerable to say, hey, I need this, is really taking the stigma off of having a therapist and having someone to go to talk to. We live in a culture where, and it's not a man needs to be a man and a girl needs to be a girl. It's just the stigma, like, I don't need a therapist. There's nothing wrong with me. And it's not even about that there's something wrong with you. It's about that we need the social connection. We need, if we don't have someone that we can talk to personally that can give us the perspective that we need to be able to go to somebody from an outside source that's safe that they can talk to. And I really think if we could start promoting that more as the first step before the prescription, I think we would see less addiction to the prescription because they wouldn't be writing it so much, because so many times they take the pill and then that's all they want because it gives them the emotional, I guess, what, the dopamine feeling or the, all the mental brain chemicals that go off in your head that make you feel good. But I have to say, even this weekend and being around watching up in our Lee, little rural community, all the families were out there. Little boys were getting bucked off and thrown in the dirt hard as they could possibly get. And behind them, you hear a male voice saying, way to go, way to be tough, hang in there, get back up there, do it again. The importance of a mom and dad in a child's life, there is no value that can be put on that because it's invaluable. And I think that I would like to encourage them that it's okay to talk to someone, and parents, it's okay to be mom and to be dad in your kids' life and be nosy and be there and be over protective and be over in their face. And, you know, I talked to Gray the other day saying, you know what, I was the one that would snoop in the room. I would check their cell phones. I would take their cell phones. If they didn't allow me on their social media applications and I was paying for the phone, guess what? They didn't get their phones. We just got to take, to me, that stigma off, so that our kids have that connection to know it's safe and things are okay. Would you agree or disagree?
I agree. However, what are we seeing right now in the media? All of these school shooters, what are they bringing up? Mental health. So they're, instead of helping the stigma, they're creating more stigma. Because
true.
I don't want to be labeled with that.
True. Very good point. That's a very good point. But that's the other thing, too. The media in general as a whole is so negative.
Right.
Like, it is so negative. Like, there's nothing.
Right.
The most important thing that people love to see are feel-good stories, and you can barely ever find those on the news. I found some on the Montana Wake Up Show today. I was really quite impressed that they were having feel-good stories. But overall, it's such a negative atmosphere on TV.
Absolutely. And I mean, one of the things as a therapist, in the first session, I have to go over confidentiality. I have to go over, you know, consent and what does that mean. And if someone were to call me and say, hey, is this your client? I can't affirm or deny that they are. That's how sacred these relationships are. And I tell them, if I run into you at the mall or at the beach or at the grocery store, I will never acknowledge you. Not because I'm being rude. It's because
right.
I will not break confidentiality. Let's say you're with one of your friends and I come up to you and I say hi to you and your friend is like, who's that? Well, Do you want to tell her that I'm your therapist if she doesn't know that you're in therapy? So
right.
We take it very seriously, and I could get in serious trouble and possibly lose my license if I break that confidentiality. And so, again, that stigma, we have to protect it and let people know. Nobody needs to know you're in therapy. Nobody. But
right.
reach out and get the help. Nobody needs to know.
Hmm. Yeah, it's just, it's such a, we find ourselves in such a catch-22 place. But, you know, I think when it all comes down to it, it's really, you know, just like Four International does, everything, it's about locking arms. I mean, we need to become a community again. We need to, you know, instead of always being on Facebook, you know, connect with our neighbors down the street. And I think that about the time the internet came out was about the time that all that breakdown was happening. And so a disconnected society that was already being created just became more disconnected because of the internet, because they found a way to have a different type of connection. And, you know, everything has its pros and cons, obviously. But I just think, I just like in treating emotional health, just like treating mental health and prescribing prescription drugs, there's got to be a way that we can address the symptoms of our society without all the stigma and just getting to the root and really finding a way to become, I mean, you guys live in LA. I mean, that is a crazy busy place. What do you guys do as a family to stay connected? What is something, you know, what are some things that you as, cause you guys have a great family, your daughter, your husband. I mean, I love your husband. Her husband comes every year to Vegas and they're always in the front row cheering us on. And I mean, they're just, I won't even tell you, it's just a fun time. It's a great time down in Vegas every December, but you guys are a great little family. So what things do you guys do as a family to make sure you keep that unity together?
Well, our daughter is 14. She's in club soccer, and we go to all of her sporting events. They just won the championship in softball. And you know what? I'm very blessed that I can make my own schedule, and so I'm able to be at a 3:00 game for her. And I know that a lot of families don't have that luxury. However, when you get home, don't get on your cell phone, don't turn on the TV, have a technology-free couple hours and come together with your family, go to the beach, go to the park, have a picnic in the middle of your living room, be creative, think outside the box. And this is easy for me to kind of whip these out because I even suggest these to couples that come and see me where their marriage is on the verge of a divorce. Whatever you're
right.
doing in the past is not working, and so we have to figure out change. And I know that change is difficult. Nobody likes change, but what you're doing is not working. So there's got to be a new way of doing things that are going to improve the relationship. And I use the analogy, and this can go across with a family, a plant. What do you have to do to a plant in order for it to grow?
So water it. That's a bad one for me because I can't keep plants alive.
Well, then that's my point. If we do not nurture the plant, it will die. And with our families and with our couples, if we don't nurture each other, we will die. We have to nurture one another. And that means, again, being spontaneous, being creative, think outside the box. And it doesn't mean spending a $200 date night. It means, again, going to, you know, Balboa Island and walking on the island, holding hands, and just having that quality time together. Taking your kids to the beach and having them run around and build a sandcastle. I mean, there's so many things that we can do for free, and we don't take advantage of it. And the one thing that frustrates me is I hear, well, I don't have time. You know what? That's just an excuse. If
it
your
is.
Family and your partner does not deserve that time to make, then you're the one with the issue.
Mm. And that's so true. And you know, this has been such a great hour, and I really appreciate you, Elizabeth and Maria, for joining me tonight. We got about 4 minutes left, but there's a couple things that I want to agree with you on what you said, and it made me think, you know, I'm the first one to say I failed twice. I mean, I failed at marriage, and I didn't understand it, and I didn't get it. And through the love and guidance of friendships like I have in Four International and Maria and those lifelong relationships, I healed, I grew, and I found the love of my life. And I can honestly say now, because of where he's been and where I've been and what we don't want to bring into a relationship, we have found that being in love, by loving each other, by including the kids and always inviting them, whether they come or they don't come, but being the example in our relationship truly will change them. Because, and the only proof that I have, and I just have to show, is because, and it's not a pat on my back, because Lord knows, and Maria really knows, that my life has not been like 100% bulletproof. But by the grace of God, watching and finally receiving and having real love in a relationship, hearing my daughter say, "Mom, I hope one day I find a love like you and Gray," that floored me. That took me to my knees, because I think about the example that I'd set for her in my younger years and what I didn't know. And that's what I mean why I feel like it's so important that we fill our generation with emotional tools so that they can thrive and have the kind of life that they truly deserve to have. And so I love what you're doing. I love that you're setting the standard in your own personal life. And by doing so, you're being able to set the standard with your clients and the people that you see on a daily basis. So I thank you, Elizabeth, for being with me tonight and talking about this issue. Again, this is all to promote this great cause of Victoria's Voice. We really want to help bring whatever financial support we can to these great organizations. So if you have someone that's been affected by prescription drug abuse or emotional and mental health issues, and you want to honor them by purchasing a Heart with an Awareness ribbon of choice, please go to my website, RebeccaMatheson.com, and purchase one of those with shipping for $79. Wear it proudly and send others to the website. And if you want to have your own campaign for something similar to that, reach out to us and we'll put you in contact with the right people. So with that, I think, Elizabeth, is there anything else you'd like to add before we close it out?
Just that, you know, I appreciate your time in doing this and taking the effort and bringing the awareness, because this is exactly what we need to do. It's about prevention and awareness. And Maria, thank you too for allowing us to have this platform, and invite me back. I would love to come back and speak some more on this topic.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you. I appreciate you, Maria. Thank you for the platform. And we, you know, I spent a lot of time posting written content, hashtagging it Real Talk with Rebecca. So if there's anything that you want to hear us talk about on air, just put it on Instagram or send us a Facebook message and hashtag it Real Talk with Rebecca, and we'll try and bring it to you on a very special segment. So until next time, we thank you for your time, and we hope you have a great evening, and God bless.